If you're just tuning in, this is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. You're tuned into the Kenai Conversation. I'm Sabine Pooks. Today we're speaking with several students and educators about supporting LGBTQ plus students on the Kenai Peninsula and beyond. We're talking to Homer High School students Sophia Diaz and Thea Person, Homer High School special education teacher Winter Marshall Allen, Jenny Foyer, who teaches at Wasilla Middle School, and Leslie Bird, a co-coordinator for Soldotna Pride in the Park. Often when we're talking about movements and we're talking about supporting folks from marginalized communities, the onus of generating that momentum typically falls on people from these communities. How do we have these conversations and lift up voices of LGBTQ students and educators without making them rehash what they're going through and without putting too much of the onus on them to advocate for themselves? I don't know, Leslie, if you have any thoughts on that.
I do. That, unfortunately, is the reality in a lot of minority circles that I have. I'm very privileged. I travel very openly in my circles because I look like the ruling demographic. The work that needs to be done has to be done. And the folks who experience it, unfortunately, are the ones who have the most experience in what needs to happen. What I'm trying to help do is spread that, like with trainings, you know, we need more people who are willing to step up and be allies and learn this and be trainers so that you can take the onus off of the folks experiencing the discrimination. But it's not just that, you don't want to swoop in to be a savior and act like people are incapable of taking care of themselves. But you do want to use your privilege and your platform to lift up whatever message they're saying. And even more importantly, believe their message. A lot of folks will come to me with their stories of violence right here in our own community in Sterling. Just 2 years ago, I'm sure, you know, KDLL covered it. There was a stabbing and a lot of folks were victim blaming. That in itself is a form of discrimination. To Thea and Sophia's points earlier, I was thinking about this. Discrimination is not always overt. Physical violence and hate crimes, which again has happened here, it's people fearing what they don't know. It's slurs, it's victim blaming, it's homophobic and transphobic jokes. It's brushing it off. It's saying, oh, we're all human, can't you just deal with it? Those are all ways of discrimination and microaggressions. Sorry, did I address your question? Exactly, Thea, thank you. If people joke about it and they don't interrupt these kinds of jokes, it makes other people think it's okay to do them.
Yeah, thank you for that. Jenny, go ahead. You're going to bring up some organizations.
Yes, so I mentioned that my husband went down with me to Kenai or to Soldotna this weekend. And my husband and I are on the board of an organization called the Queen's Guard. So I'm taking my educator hat off for a little bit. But the Queen's Guard is an organization that my husband started that supports LGBTQ youth across in Anchorage in the Valley. We go to the events like Drag Queen Story Hour, and we'll stand up and we'll protect the drag queens as they're walking in. We protect the patrons. Well, not protect, but if there's protesters there, we block the protesters from shouting the negative stuff. We chant happy things. So we've gone to Pride Prom, and we've helped escort student LGBTQ youth into their dances. This year, we held a Pride in Wasilla, which for Wasilla is pretty amazing. It's called Underground Pride. And officially, if anybody asks, we had 500 people, but unofficially, I think we had about 750 people show up at our event this year. We had 40 vendors. And to see some of the youth that I teach in my school show up there, was just awesome. It was super amazing. And I've letting, we have youth in the Valley. We have youth in the state, the LGBTQ youth in the state that need to know that we are here. They need to know that we turn, that they go from youth to adults and become elders, and that they're going to be okay. And despite the discrimination, despite all the stuff, that we're here, we're here, we're together, and we can do this. Sorry. So I get excited and then my thoughts go all over the place.
But, no, thank you for sharing that with us. Leslie?
You know, Jenny, I had the same thought just now. Sabine, earlier you asked me about the connection with KPC, and I was so excited to be a part of this conversation. I completely spaced over the origins of Pride in the Park. Several years ago, probably 4 or 5 now, a youth suicide preventionist coordinator within the Kenaitse tribe hosted a Two-Spirit suicide awareness walk. Excuse me. This person had done the Two-Spirit events previously, like on the beach and some for several years. And when the LGBT Alliance had heard about it, they were like, we want to be a part of this. And so a partnership formed with that. And through that partnership is where Pride in the Park came from. So it's actually, it was born of the KPC organization, but is now entirely separate and out parallel to it. So it can work in partnership with any of the other groups. So I apologize for missing that background earlier.
Thank you for adding that. Jenny, before you were talking a lot about things that you teach educators to do and the kind of tools you equip them with so that they can support their students who are on the LGBTQ plus spectrum. And Thea and Sophia, I kind of want to turn that to you. Are there, we were talking before about flags and pins. Is there anything else that, you know, teachers have done that has meant a lot to you in that regard? And I guess an additional question I have is what does it mean to have your teachers standing up in that way? Thea, maybe we can start with you.
Like we were kind of saying earlier, it shows that there are safe people. It creates a sense of security that I don't have to worry about being discriminated against if a teacher is showing that they are an ally or if they are making an effort to be an ally. It allows students to be more focused on their education, which is of course what school is designed for. There's not that sense of, oh no, am I safe?
Right. Having that kind of the feeling of safety frees up space, emotional and mental space to learn, to be in the classroom, to be a student.
Exactly.
Yeah. Sophia, did you have anything to add to that?
Well, something to add would be that it doesn't have to be a huge gesture like Jenny, if I remember correctly, mentioned. It could just be like wearing a pin on your jacket or using a student's correct name or pronouns. You know, it doesn't have to be a really big gesture, just even a small thing to show that you're a safe person to go to and will support your students, no matter what community they're a part of.
After testifying, I had multiple teachers in the school tell me, hey, I heard your testimony. I'm so proud of you and your other friends who testified. And just knowing that there were people who listened and who remembered made it just all so worthwhile.
Yeah, some of the incidents that came up at that meeting involved books centering around queer characters. And there were some books that were temporarily removed from the shelves, for example, of Sewer Library, that had to do with themes of LGBTQ plus characters and plot lines. And, you know, why is it important for students to have access to books and movies and TV shows and music with characters that are like them and that are on the LGBTQ plus spectrum? Like, why is that an important thing for students? Winter?
I would say that it's a matter of civil rights, right? We have our First Amendment right, where we have the access and freedom of media and speech. Students can't have access to all knowledge if the knowledge is limited by the views and perspectives of the person who's in power at that specific point in time. This is the United States of America, and we believe in this, in the fact that everybody should have the freedom to consume whatever it is that they choose to consume. This was at Seward High School. These are high school students who are facilitating their voice and choice and the media that they are choosing to consume. Library media funds are protected under the First Amendment constitutional rights, and like, We can't start impeding upon those things when we're talking about teaching our students to be the best individuals that they can be and be productive citizens later on in life. Like, you have to model the same behavior that you want everybody else to then facilitate later on once they leave our institution. And to chime in on like the girls' testimony, Thea and Sophia are. They're amazing students, and I'm incredibly blessed to be on Homer's campus. Our current Pride group fluctuates between 15 and 20 something students. And it's amazing. It's amazing and it's awesome. I'm glad that they have this space. I'm glad that we are able to provide this space. I'm glad that the district was able to come to a resolution with the grievance. And now we have language that allows all 42 of our diverse schools to be able to have symbols of diversity and inclusion that will then represent the 8,000 plus students here on the Kenai Peninsula. Like, that matters. Everybody needs to be seen. Everybody needs that champion. All of our students, I'm a minority. I have walked with the oppression of being a minority my whole life. I will walk with that oppression my whole life, but it is my mission as an educator to make sure that students have the best start possible, right? So our institutions are supposed to be safe havens. There's nothing about them that should hinder their success, nothing.
Could I add on to that about Please the do, books? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is, I think that no one, no matter what group they're in, deserves to be erased from anything literature related, even not literature related. You know, no one deserves to be erased or not have their voice be heard, especially when it's in a school. You know, some people might not see why it's a big deal because they haven't lived through that experience of, like, you know, not seeing, like, characters and shows representing people like you, or characters in books. And I think that's very important, especially to the younger people in the community, to not be erased.
Yeah, thank you for that. Winter, I'd like to ask you about the Human Civil Rights Committee that the Teachers Association convened. I know you're part of that committee. How did that come to be, and what have the meetings for that committee been like so far?
So the committee was established through our policy manual. We have a policy committee that meets annually that to go and review our standing policies and bylaws in regards to how our union operates to facilitate the work of the body. The Human and Civil Rights Committee is a group of members that meets regularly to serve as champions for social justice and advocates for the underrepresented individuals within our community. It's important that our members know that we are here to provide resources to acknowledge inequity, and in some cases provide equally applied application of standards and expectations, like the library situation. We have within our school board policy a manner in which to address literature that might be seen as controversial, but those policies and those practices weren't followed within the building. They weren't followed within the school board up further up the chain of command. And so now it becomes a matter of what training is going to take place in order for everybody to better understand what those policies look like, so that we're not hindering the access to our students. right? And so that we're not impeding anybody's, in this case, civil rights, right? Because library media and library funds are very protected. So, and so are our protected classes, right? And our LGBTQ students fall under Title IX and they are a protected class. So.
Of course, you're talking from Homer High School. I'm sitting here in Kenai. These are the bigger communities on the peninsula, but as you mentioned before, the district has over 40 schools, and there are some schools in really small communities, and there are some schools you can only get to by boat or plane. How do we make sure that the support that we are putting out there is extending to students in these really small communities where they might be one of a couple students in the class? They might be the only, you know, queer student in their school. How do we extend the support to kids in those places? Leslie?
As far as education goes, for specifically for students, I mean, that's going to be tough, because you can put 20 people in the room, have them all go through the same training, and all of them, if that's the only training they ever have, they're all going to walk away with a slightly different story based on their experiences and their environment that they're returning to. So it's really hard to say, we'll just train everyone and send them back out to wherever they came from. I think Zoom and online things are becoming bigger and bigger parts of our daily life as we're sitting here having this conversation. But one thing I did want to make sure everyone here heard about is that there is a listserv called the Queer Collective that was started earlier this year in the effort to try to create or connect the network of LGBTQ supports and community members together so that we can continue to facilitate, or at least in some areas even start facilitating that kind of message. Currently, it's pretty heavy on the Fairbanks Anchorage side. We've got quite a few more Peninsula folks who have joined. I think there's one in Nome, one in Juneau, one in Bethel. But we definitely, and it's literally a collective. There is not one leader. It is just a group of people who can email each other. Hey, I'm doing Pride in the Park. Does anyone have any activity suggestions? Hey, I'm getting my gender changed on my passport. Does anyone know how to do this? It's an awesome resource, and I hope one day to see it be a venue to help spread these kinds of things further into Alaska.
Hmm. Winter, did you have something to add there?
Yeah, you were talking about how we can support educators and students. And I think that it starts with culture and narrative, right? And little symbols, right? The little pins that we wear, the little stickers that we put on our mugs, the door markers that we're able to put outside of our classrooms, with the resolution statement that the KPEA and the Kenai Peninsula Borough Education was able to come to agreement with allows language for our educators to display symbols of diversity and inclusion, as long as it's not suppressing some other demographic. There's pathways for some of this. And now it's just a matter of how do we continue to support those allies who may feel like, I want to be more vocal, I want to be more supportive, but it hasn't been safe to be vocal and be supportive because this community hasn't necessarily or hasn't traditionally embraced this demographic of people, because it's been this underground network. The Queer Collective is an amazing, amazing resource that in organizing for the Joint Pride Juneteenth celebration that we had this past June, I was able to find out about and be able to tap into. And then it can't be this underground resource. It really needs to be this public thing that businesses and nonprofits and individuals can tap into and say, I'm here, and how can I be a part? And maybe I have this talent or something, and it will support the community. Or maybe there's this happening in the community, and I can be a help in this manner to support this event or whatever. I mean, like, that's how every other carnival and craft show and art fair and food truck event and all these other things and amazing things that take place here on the Kenai Peninsula is how all those other things happen. So it's the same concept. Removing the silo work is important.
Thea, you have your hand raised. Would you like to add something?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Ms. Winter and also with what Leslie said. A big part of it is making sure that the topic is not like taboo. Be a person gay, straight, bi, trans, no matter what, we're all part of it, like the same community, and making sure that we have the resources and the safety and the knowledge to like have open conversations and make sure that we're not us, it's not us versus them. It's how can we better ourselves? How can we be the same community? How can we support each other? And all that, like, it's all about building and making things better.
And you mentioned, you're talking before about the rec room in Homer. I mean, how, and that's a very physical space. Are there any other kind of virtual spaces, Thea or Sophia, that maybe you would like to people to know about that they can access, or any other sort of online ways for people who don't maybe live in one of the more populous places on the peninsula?
I do know there is an organization called Identity Alaska, which is statewide, actually, and it's for queer youth to find support in community.
There's also the resource of just your basic everyday social media. Obviously, that's a place that can both be negative and positive, but finding the right people, having friends in different communities over Instagram or Facebook or Snapchat or whatever you use, as long as you like have methods there that make sure you're safe and all that stuff, it can be really great. I've met great people over the internet.
I imagine being in a place as isolated as Alaska, being able to tap into other communities and meet other people through social media, through Instagram, that could be a very valuable tool. The collective, Leslie, that you were talking about, how can people join that listserv if they'd like to?
You know, we've never talked about a formal method of joining. That's how informal and community-based it is. I have been having folks just message Pride in the Park. It's Soul.Nam Pride in the Park on Facebook. I can add folks that way too, but I think maybe Jenny might have an idea. For right now though, you can message me directly and I can add someone.
Jenny?
I was just gonna mention an event out in the Valley that the Queen's Guard hosts. We do LGBTQ youth coffee for ages 13 to 18. And it is, I believe, I want to say it's the second Saturday.
Yes.
From 2 to 4, my husband is right here. It's at the Starbucks in Wasilla up by the Taco Bell and Target. So our next one is supposed to be December 11th from 2 to 4. So youth all over the state are more than welcome to come. And then we do an LGBTQ adult coffee on the third Sundays from 6:30 to 8:30. So that's all I was going to bring up. Sorry.
Thank you. We only have a couple minutes left, but one other thing I just wanted to touch on before we kind of close up is some of the things we've talked about require putting yourself out there, and as you mentioned, Leslie, people who have these kind of intersecting identities, some people might feel more comfortable putting themselves in a very visible position where they're advocating very publicly or kind of being themselves in a very visible way. Other people that might not feel as safe just kind of by nature of how well they're able to blend in to this frankly very white community that we're part of. So how do we kind of make sure that people feel physically safe through events like Pride and at school board meetings when they're coming to testify?
Well, we've we've been pretty lucky in, you know, to have the internet option. So about 2 years ago, we had a town hall safety, an LGBTQ safety town hall in at the Soldotna Public Library, which, by the way, stay tuned for another one coming up hopefully in January. Teaser, that's a Soldotna Pride in the Park thing. You know, we've always, I say we, our little leadership group of LGBTQ folks that I interact with have always made it very clear to the folks we try to work with is that if you ever feel uncomfortable or unsafe, you can reach out to one of us that you know. And we help, like we go out of our way to make sure like, okay, you don't have a ride and you would have to walk in your rainbow jumpsuit. No, someone will come get you. But also there are other groups too that tend to come out mostly during Pride. But like in Soldotna, we have a mom hugs group that just formed on their own, like spontaneously. And I know several of the ladies who run it, and you know, they would be more than willing to walk with folks who feel unsafe. Several of them have brought their veteran spouses with them as well. And then we also have a group of church folks, Lutheran and Methodist churches also are there with very public facing, we are here to support you and help you. And I feel really lucky that we have those kinds of folks in our community who are willing as allies, as folks who do not every day live this experience, who are willing to put themselves out there because there's strength in numbers, honestly. Because, you know, you don't want to have to look over your shoulder all the time and carry self-defense stuff or go to a self-defense class, but you probably should. That's just the reality of where we're at right now, unfortunately. I know that since the incident 2 years ago, safety around myself in person has been extremely increased. And everyone that I know that's related to Pride in the Park, we just turned it up to level 5, you know, and it gets exhausting, which is why we do this work, this labor of love, this labor of necessity. You know, we're all tired, but if we don't work to do it, who else is going to? And then we'll always have to live this way. So
I've never heard of this mom's hugs group. Can you just talk really quickly about that? Because it just sounds so lovely. Sure. And that would be a really nice thing to kind of end on.
You know, I might be attributing it to the wrong individual, and I apologize if I am, but Many Voices is a Facebook group you can find. The leadership in that group is part of the Free Moms Hugs. And a lot of the folks, both in Free Mom Hugs and the Church Hugs group, both interact through that page, as well as the Pride in the Park page. So we do have a community of folks who are willing to support, take in, host for dinner, walk with. It's just like Winter said, right now it's kind of all underground, and we're so tired of that. We would like to see the sunshine just like everybody else.
And I'm gonna tag on.
Yeah, Jenny.
One last organization that I think is super important for people to know about, in it's based in Anchorage, is Choosing Our Roots. It is an organization that helps LGBTQ youth who have been kicked out of their homes or are in transition or houseless to, they find host homes for youth, and they get them a place to stay and help them get them on their feet. And it's just another good resource to have available. So anyways, thank you.
Thank you for that. We are about there on time, but before we close out, just because we started with you two, Thea and Sophia, I'd like to just ask if there's anything you'd like to say to students on the LGBTQ plus spectrum or allies, if there's anything you'd like people who are listening to know or would like to say. Sophia?
I would like LGBT students to know they're not the only ones. There's other people out there who love and support them no matter what their identity is, and to always be themselves, you know.
Thank you. Thea, is there anything else you'd like to say?
I concur, Sophia. And also, for every person who says something mean or negative, there are twice as many people who will love and support everyone else. This is an issue that needs to be addressed, but there are also so many people, amazing people in our communities, in Alaska, in our schools, within our friend groups, and what support that we have seen as people have been bringing this issue up to the table has been so amazing. There's more to be done, but that which has been done, I'm really grateful for.
And that is all the time we have. A huge thank you to our guests today, Sophia Diaz and Thea Person, Winter Marshall Allen, Jenny Foyer, and Leslie Bird. You've been listening to the Kenai Conversation. I'm Sabine Pooks.